with us, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, broadcasting live and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. You can watch today's program by going to GaryKnoll.com or ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. Today, no guest, no original investigative reporting, no issue. We will talk, however, in depth about blueberries and what they do to extend our lifespan. Some new information from Susan Evans, Life Extension. And I'm always stopped and asked on the streets of New York, gee whiz, Gary, what can I do for my blood sugar? It's too high. Well, most Americans have too high blood sugar, and the latest research shows that our government has understated the number of Americans who are overweight, and that means about 30% of all adults in the United States are now considered obese when they recalibrated the figures. So that means most of those people are going to have elevated blood sugar because overweight and increased blood sugar and diabetes, prediabetes, almost always goes hand in hand. So a new way to reduce your blood sugar level and lose weight from Michael Downey, and I'll share that with you. I will be taking calls beginning in about 10 minutes, but I want to share some important health and nutrition insights, information that can allow us to live a longer and healthier life. And that's what this program's known for. Just a little aside before I get into cruciferous vegetables, and if you're eating cruciferous vegetables, that's really good. But there was a time when very few people ate any cruciferous vegetables. Most of you who are baby boomers, I'm sure, went through what I went through. My background was very typical. You didn't have fresh fruit unless it was in the summertime. Bananas were available year-round and apples, but they were always old apples because apples can be stored for about 9 months, but then they would wax them. And I remember specifically my parents saying, always cut the skin off because you don't want the wax. Well, now we know that the skin of an apple has the most nutritious elements within it. So you want the skin, but you don't want the toxins. It's no different than a person that cannot afford, let's say, some organic produce or doesn't have access to it. So then get those items that are least likely to be sprayed. The most are lettuces and grapes. But the least would be avocado or cabbage and broccoli. In fact, one of the reasons that we believe that cruciferous vegetables are so healthy is because they have natural chemicals that repel insects, much like garlic. So in that way, we're getting the benefit of that. In any case, I didn't see a whole lot of vegetables growing up, and the ones we did have were overcooked, kind of mushy. But we did exercise a lot. There was, unfortunately, after the Second World War, there's a whole movement to get women who were the principal people in the kitchen out of the kitchen. And yet I remember my older aunts would be doing everything from scratch. And it was interesting to watch them. And I always had a curiosity about how things are made. Before a muffin ends up on the table, where does it come from? How do they get it that way? And I remember once watching my mother make gravy, and I didn't know that they used blood. You know, cow's blood is a thickener. Once I saw cow's blood, and I saw this little bubbliness and very mucousy looking, and then she mixed in salt, pepper, and flour. Of course, this was not whole wheat flour, but then they'd cook it up, and that became the gravy. I didn't know that. Well, that was the end of my gravy eating, I can assure you. And when I grew up, everyone had to have their liver because we were told that liver was rich in iron. And indeed, it is rich in iron. But it's also the body's filtration organ. That's where you eliminate all your toxins. If it's medicines you're taking, they come out of the liver. If it's alcohol, alcohol metabolites come out of the liver. Even today, while I was writing a commentary that I'm going to be sharing with you on tomorrow's program, there was, on the background, there was this guy who eats strange foods all over the world, bald-headed guy, fat, and everything is always excellent in his opinion. And he was out on an Indian reservation, and they had goats and sheep. So they slaughtered a sheep, and then they showed how they cut off the head and threw it in a fire, and then they opened up the body, and they took the intestines, including the colon, and they boiled that, and then the rest of it they threw into a pit and fried. Well, the fire, of course, burned off the hair on the head, and there's a lot of hair on the head of a sheep, and then they cracked open the skull, but before they did that, all the delicacies, the eyeballs, and he's chewing on an eyeball saying, this feels, tastes very gelatinous. You think? The eyeball is gelatinous. It's a lot of water in the eyeball, but I could imagine, and I certainly understand, in cultures all over the world, they'll eat whatever they've grown up to eat, whatever's available. And in many places, there's just not the abundance of food in one place. So if you're in a place where there's lots of beetles, you eat beetles. If there's bats, you'll cook a bat. And they don't waste any part of the animal. They eat the whole animal in most places in the world. There was one scene where they took a turtle in Australia out in the woods, and they built a fire, they cooked it up, and then they pulled everything out of the turtle and ate everything inside the turtle. Might seem a little gross, and watching it, if you're not used to that, it would be. But have you ever visited a veal factory, a chicken farm, a pig farm? Now, a pig's a highly intelligent animal. I've had pigs. In fact, I had a potbelly pig that was smarter than my dogs. You go out for a walk, he goes right beside you. You go for a swim, it jumps right in the water with you. When everyone lays down to take a nap, it curls right up with everything else. It never thought itself separate from any of the other animals, the dogs, the cattle. It'd just be comfortable with anyone. Very smart. And was housebroken. I could housebreak a pig so it would not go in the house quicker than I could a puppy. And very friendly and very loving. But when you stress them, they're going to eat. Gee, do humans do the same? When you confine them in a very narrow area where they're naturally very curious, and they're rooters, that's why they have the tusks, just like a wild boar is a rooter. They will put those little horns in the ground and they'll dig. They're digging for roots and bulbs and tubers, which are very good for them. You let them go in a field, and in about a month, that field looks like a World War I trenches. But if you feed them well, but where I grew up, nobody fed a pig well. They would take the slop, everything that was bad and old, and they'd throw it out and the pigs would eat it. And somehow they figured that there was nothing wrong. There was something wrong. Pigs get diseases, just like a human would get a disease. You'd end up with massive abscesses, massive cancers in the liver, in the kidneys. What did they do? Nothing. Nobody would ever see that, so they grind it up and sell it. So now, and also the French, among other interesting ways that they eat, they also eat horse meat. And you can think, well, gee whiz, that's gross. And one of the guys was in one of the food channels said, well, now that I've come to see the cattle prior to them being slaughtered, and we're looking for ribs. So his partner was feeling the ribs on this cow, and this cow was turned around licking them. And the guy says, well, how am I supposed to kill this cow and eat its ribs, or serve its ribs, when it's got a name, and it just, it look at those big eyes, and it just licked my face. I can't kill the cow now. Okay, good for him. But does that mean that all the 8 billion, that's with a B, not M, not million, billion, animals that are raised each year in the United States for human consumption, because they haven't been given a name and you haven't seen them, somehow it's not a problem eating them? I'm dealing with this in a new film. Film is maybe 2 weeks away from completion, but because I'm completing 3 new films in the next 2 to 3 weeks, that'll wait till I'll have a premiere here for that one in September. I'm going to have a September, November, January, and March, 4 premieres, plus one this coming weekend, this week. But what it tells me is that we don't have a lot of thought when it comes to food. And then when I'm watching this guy say, here, and giving it to the little Native American boy, and the kid is eating the brains, the kid is eating the intestine. He was eating the intestine. Say, everywhere I go in the world, people love the intestines. All right, let's stop for a moment and say, okay, why? Because they're deep fried and they're with MSG, so in peanut oil, so it has a nice flavor to it. Is that it? Crunchy? But what if we were to say, let's eat what's inside of a human intestine? Why don't you go to the morgue and say, this is stupid. Why are we burying this person? You know, this is food, and why not eat that person? I'm yet defining anyone who can differentiate the flesh of a human from the flesh of a pig, the flesh of a cow, the flesh of a chicken, the flesh of a horse, or anything else that's got flesh. And the intestine in every human being is the eliminative organ. It's where all the toxins come out. It's where everything, dead cells, bacteria, undigestible fibers, it all ends up in the intestine, then the rectum, then how the body. In a healthy person, there's a natural flow. In a person that eats healthy foods, it's not putrefying as it would be if it's meat and cheese. You start eating a lot of cheese, you have all this mucus in the intestine, you have candida, a lot of sugar, you have candida and yeast in the intestine, and it can get really bad. And then meat slows down digestion. The moment you eat a piece of meat, the fat in that meat is going to send an alarm off to the gallbladder, start secreting bile through the bile duct, and it's like traffic goes from 60 miles an hour to 5 miles an hour. The longer any meat item is in contact with the very sensitive mucous membrane lining of your intestine, the greater likelihood for having malignancies occur. Hence, colorectal cancer and other itises, inflammation, are far more prevalent in people who have any alcohol, because that alcohol, where do you think it goes? It goes into the body and goes right into that intestine. Some will get absorbed into blood, and then you can end up in the blood and through the liver and kidneys, all of which are toxic. Drinking alcohol and drinking rat poison are about the same, except the rat poison will probably kill you a lot faster, but alcohol is doing a great job. About 1 million kidney cells, 1 million liver cells, 1 million brain cells per drink. Then you wonder why people who drink always look aged. Their skin is wrinkled. They have that ruddy complexion, broken capillaries. You go to Scotland, you go to Ireland, stand outside of a bar in Ireland, in Belfast, beautiful city, nice people, lots of drunks. And alcohol is one of the ways that people socialize, understand that, but also a way that, like a lot of people, you bury your sorrow. You walk away from a problem you cannot solve. And you know there's a certain point where every human being has a tipping point where if they can't change a problem, resolve it, transcend it, they adapt to it. And in our society, we overeat for adaptation, and we always eat the wrong foods. You'll never see someone saying, I'm so stressed, I'm so angry, I'm going to have a sprout salad. It just doesn't happen. No, they'll bury their face in all the high dairy, high gluten, high crispy, high salty, high sugary foods they can. Or someone else will take tranquilizers, or someone else will drink, someone else will gamble. Each person selects a way of sublimating what's wrong. When you start looking at all the different ways we sublimate, it becomes the biggest single industry in the United States. It creates more income each year than either of the largest oil companies or the largest nuclear industry or the largest pharmaceutical company. That is how much money is made in the industries from sublimation. So you could put it a little different way, with a positive point of view. If we were really happy, we wouldn't be unhealthy, and we wouldn't be making unhealthy choices, because most happy people stop before they do something and ask, what is the likely outcome of my choice, and then back away, and then make a more appropriate choice. So just the mere magnitude and complexity of so many integrated bad choices in life that we then somehow feel that we own them, we have to live with them, instead of simply saying, well, I might have made that bad choice then, but I'm here today and I'm going to walk away from this choice because it no longer fits my life. And guilt and shame and social conditioning keep us tied to the bad. So when I watch a story and I'm seeing a kid and a guy promoting and feeling good about eating crap, they're eating crap. What do you think is in an intestine? It is feces. And yet, so they, instead of saying, we're really strange, we're eating excrement. If a human came near excrement, they would be given a severe lesson in hygiene and in etiquette. You don't go near it. But then on cooking shows, we show why it's good. And in the South, where I grew up, it had chitlins. And people thought that was just good. You put some ham hocks, parts of the feet, that's just what you want to eat. Pig's knuckles, pickled in monosodium glutamate. Man, every bar in the South had a jar of red, because of sodium nitrite, pickled pig's feet. Pickled pig's feet. You got this gritty, tough, it's just a fingernail. It's keratinized tissue surrounded by a little bit of flesh. So if you said to someone, how about going down with me to the bar and let's dine on some toenails of pigs and eat the crap out of their intestine? You think people are going to go for that? So we then change the image and we say, the culinary delights of fried intestine. I don't care what you do to try to dress it up, it's still crap. So just remember that. And meat is meat and flesh is flesh. So whether you eat the beetles, which people do. In fact, I remember once I was down in Mexico and I was going to different places to study how genetic engineering had affected the local corn production, which at one time Mexico had one of the largest varieties of heirloom corn in the world. Well over 10,000 varieties. Now it's down to just dozens because of genetic engineering and loss of biodiversity. And I was out on the road, and they had one of these stands. And so the driver said that he was going to stop and get something. I said, well, not the best idea to stop in Mexico. A, you don't see any hygiene around here, no running water. B, there's going to be almost an absolute 100% certainty you're going to end up with me big dysentery. He said, oh, no, you know, natural cuisine, blah, blah, blah. So they had this big bowl. It was a 2-gallon bowl. A wooden bowl. And over it, this guy had what looked like a cheesecloth. So he made up this whole tortilla shell, and he poured in some chili sauce into it, and then something that looked like a guacamole in the bottom, and then he starts ladling in beetles, little bugs of all kinds, whole variety of beetles, and then he rolls it over and seals it. And the guy takes it and starts eating it. Well, as he's eating it, they're coming out of his mouth and going up his cheek and down his chin. And he's trying to catch them. And I'm thinking, whoa, of all the things you could consume, beetles, A, are not going to be high in anything except a crustacean over their body. But just the thought of all those things crawling around your mouth as you're trying to chew them, and you're not going to chew them all. So a lot of them are going to be crawling around your intestine, crawling around your stomach. Wouldn't it be interesting if one of them had enough teeth to bite you? In any case, everywhere I've gone in the world, I've always looked at the strange and exotic things that people eat, including the liver of geese and ducks that are overfed until their liver is literally diseased. Then they puree that and say, do you know what I'm talking about? Who knows? What's it called? What is pate liver called? Well, what you're doing is you're taking a septic system. So what if tomorrow, outside your house in Long Island, you opened up the ground, you opened up your septic system, and you say, we're going to sell you some of our family's byproduct, but we'll spice it and we'll cook it in some way. We just don't stop and think for a moment. What are we doing? Why would we eat something that would raise our blood sugar, raise our cholesterol, cause a heart attack, cause stroke, definitely is bad, killing liver cells? What is the ultimate outcome of that? Well, you're seeing it everywhere you look, on every block in the United States, and now worldwide. You know, that gets back, as I said, I'm going to take you on a little aside. Well, that was a little aside. Now back to the consumption of cruciferous vegetables. Here is the latest, and this is from the American Association for Cancer Research. research done by a fellow at Vanderbilt University, that's down in Nashville, found that when you eat cruciferous vegetables, you're going to have less breast cancer dying and more breast cancer survivors surviving. And that's good. Quote, this is from the article. This was with stage 4 breast cancer, mind you. Says, stage 1 to stage 4 breast cancer, I see. Says, commonly consumed cruciferous vegetables, including turnips, Chinese cabbage, bok choy, and greens, while broccoli and Brussels sprouts are the most commonly consumed in the United States, and the intake is much higher in Chinese women than in American women, the levels of the bioactive compounds, such as the isothiocyanates and indoles, proposed to play a role in the anti-cancer effect of cruciferous vegetables, and it works. So, what this means, the takeaway is this. When you're eating broccoli, asparagus, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, watercress, mustard, all of these, kale, these are all in the cruciferous family. Juicing them is good. Steaming them and eating them cold in salads is, I think, better. You don't want to overcook them. You want to keep the nutrients ready to be released when you chew them or when you juice them. But now, for those of you eating any of your cruciferous compounds, this is just one more reason why you're doing the right thing. Also, if you start taking folate, which is folic acid, you're going to lower your incidence of hypertension later. This is the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition on this. Also, a high fiber diet was associated with protecting women's hearts. From the journal PLOS, and it talks about how at Lund University, they examined 12,535 women participating in the Swedish Malmö diet and cancer cohort study. They found that those women who had the highest fiber had 24% lower risk of having a heart attack. That's good news. More fiber. I'm suggesting the average American has anywhere from 10 to 15 grams a day, and it's not a high-quality fiber. I'm suggesting 30 to 50 grams of quality fiber a day. Now, some people get confused on this. On the one hand, I'm completely against drinking coffee. One of my doctoral dissertations was on caffeinism, and I did the actual clinical studies, and it was published in a peer-reviewed journal, and immediately was attacked by the quackbusters who are there to support the coffee industry. Well, I am for consuming the green coffee extract. Now, it's completely different. That's from the organic green coffee plant, but it's not roasted. It's not brewed. It does not have the problems. To the contrary, it says, quote, this is from the National Meeting of the American Chemical Society. It says, 700 milligrams of green coffee extract or a placebo daily for 6 weeks found that people lost weight an average of 17 pounds, including 16% decrease in body fat percentage, and which represent about 10% of their body weight. Quote, based upon our results, taking multiple capsules of green coffee extract a day while eating a low-fat, healthy diet and exercising regularly appears to be a safe, effective, inexpensive way to lose weight. So that's good news. Now, even better news is a study from the Journal of Science Translational Medicine. It showed that half of all the cancers in the world are preventable. I think that's extremely low. I think it's closer to 90%. If you exercise, if you have a vegan diet that's a healthy vegan diet, not an unhealthy one, if you don't have alcohol, and if you stay away from gluten and meat products, then it's about 90% preventing cancers. Now, the Mayo Clinic found that GLA, that's gamma-linolenic acid, inhibits pancreatic cancer cell growth. This is a very important study, and I'll quote this here. It says that a Dr. Ruth Lupa, of the American Association for Cancer Research annual meeting presented information on the protective effect of gamma-linolenic acid, GLA, against the growth of one type of pancreatic cancer. So, in fact, quote, when GLA was tested in cells with high fatty acid synthesis levels, 85% of cancer cell growth was inhibited, which is a significant improvement over a standard chemotherapy for pancreatic cancer. So this worked better than any chemotherapy. So if you know anyone who is suffering from pancreatic cancer, my suggestion, GLA, gamma linolenic acid. Now, just two more things. One is that grape compounds found to block the formation of fat cells. This is in the Journal of Biological Chemistry from Purdue University. And it says that Professor of Food Science and the associates tested a tannol in culture and found that it manifested in less fat cells. And so, where to get it? Grapes. So I would eat the whole grape or drink grape juice. And finally, reducing iron and adding antioxidants helps prevent Alzheimer's disease. This is in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease, and a physician talks about you got to get more antioxidants. This was a way of helping the people, and then he explained why. But those of you in this audience, you know that already. You know that healthy antioxidants, high ORAC, is very important. And every day, more science is coming forward showing that the more high ORAC, the more cruciferous vegetables or powders, the more of the resveratrol and grapeseed extract, the healthier we are. I wish this information could get over to Dr. Oz. Mike Adams wrote a little piece. I'll quote just a paragraph of it. This is from Mike Adams, Natural News, and it says, Dr. Oz caves to Big Pharma, pimps vaccines on public after admitting he does not necessarily even vaccinate his own children. It says, vaccinations have far more benefits than risks, and when children are not vaccinated, their own health and the health of everyone around them is at serious risk. Those are in quotes. Quote, these are some of the outrageously false statements made by the infamous Dr. Mehmet Oz in a recent shill piece published by the Herald Tribune promoting the vaccine agenda. Perceived by many as an unbiased source of health information, the professor of surgery at Columbia University and host of the Dr. Oz Show is now on the record as openly spreading fear and propaganda about vaccines in order to convince his followers to get vaccinated. And then he goes on to talk about how he, quote, is a shill for the big pharma. I was in a situation recently where I actually was watching the Dr. Oz Show while I was in an airport. He had on a group of physicians who were trying to find the healthiest fast food restaurant in New York. And without exception, they all came in with the idea that, well, gee, this has less calories than this, and therefore the calories are what counted. And I was hoping that Dr. Oz would say, well, all right, this does have only 205 calories or 320 calories, but what else are we getting here that could cause a heart or health problem? It's all in sandwiches, which are very bad for the system. These are all gluten, and they all creak acrylamides to make them into crusty or bready products. There's meat in all of them, and this is meat that is loaded with hormones, antibiotics, and the stress of the animal, which is the psychic energy, all in them. And this is going to slow down digestion. It's going to raise blood pressure. High protein foods from animal sources and high sodium increase the risk of hypertension. And yet these were all cardiologists. So possibly, and let's give them the benefit of the doubt, they're simply clueless about good nutrition because none of them looked healthy. And yet on the one hand, I had Dr. Oz on my PBS special. I had three national PBS specials, all within a year and a half of each other. And the second one I had was called Get Healthy Now. And among the 12 physicians that I brought in, he was one. He had not had national exposure before. And I remember referring a lot of people. Wouldn't do that today. But he is what he is, and you can make up your mind for yourself. You don't need me or anyone else to determine who you should see. Now that brings up another issue, and then I'm going to take your calls. There are many individuals who call themselves holistic. Holistic chiropractors, holistic doctors, nurses, dentists, nutritionists. They may or may not be. Here's the criteria for what I consider a legitimate holistic clinician in any field. First, that they set aside about 15% of all patient visits to help the poor, where they take into consideration there are people who could benefit from their therapy who simply couldn't afford it. So you're still making 85% of your patients pay. So save room for the poor. To me, that is one of the hallmarks of a true holistic clinician. Secondly, don't keep people on extended protocols. I believe that when people are asked to come back over and over again, remember once someone told me, gee whiz, I just got 140 chelation therapies, and I said, why? You know, what? So I called the doctor, and someone I knew, and I said, what was it? Well, that's the protocol we had put them on. I said, but you're getting levels of minerals every day. You could certainly test this person after a couple of weeks to determine whether or not you've improved blood flow. I've written extensively on chelation therapy. But at $125 a pop, or buying them in a package still down to $110, the person spent $10,000 they shouldn't have. By getting people on any therapy where you're required to keep coming back and coming back and coming back, I don't care if it's ozone therapy, I don't care what it is, if you have to continually revisit someone, unless you have a terminal illness like terminal cancer or advanced AIDS defining illnesses, then you should have an independent outside person review your protocols. And you should review them with the physician and say, show me now, I've been in this protocol for 2 months on a regular basis, show me the results. If someone said, well, we don't know, we can't prove it, you know, but let's just keep going, all you're doing at that point is you're supporting someone's lifestyle. And that, to me, would immediately mean that, in my opinion, is not a holistic doctor, even if some of the therapies work. Also, anyone who works with people in the holistic field should be willing to put any new patient in contact with other patients so that a person can get an idea that, okay, you have, you know, stage 3 breast cancer, I have stage 3 breast cancer, I went through this protocol, here's how long it took, and here's what I have today, I only have stage 1. Then the person can have some confidence. Anyone who will not put you into touch with their patients, to me, I wouldn't see. And yet every day, people are expected to believe completely that they are unique and that there's therapies that have been proven effective and safe. All right, maybe they have been. But make the doctor prove it. Otherwise, you end up becoming a part of that person's income stream, irrespective if you're benefiting. Also, I believe that we should have lower initial fees. A lot of doctors front end their fees. A lot of them will, the moment they start getting you tested, if it's testing in their own offices, walk out. Because if they can't make the money off you in one way, the tests will be covered by insurance, and that's how they get their money. That was happening about 10 years ago when a lot of doctors were having every blood test imaginable done with every patient, and I considered all that unethical. And I told each of those doctors, and have not spoken with those doctors since, nor would I have them on my radio program. Some who had on a regular basis. I do not believe that using someone who trusts you just to exploit them because they're ignorant of what they really need. Now, that, remember, I believe if you go into a health food restaurant, you should have a better meal, a healthier meal, better even in presentation and service, ambiance, not worse. And for decades, we accepted mediocre to out bland food because, well, it's health food. But what's it mean? Because it's health food, it has to be worse, not better. And for a long time, we have seen that the number one cause of death and injury in the United States is orthodox medicine. So some people awakening to this, either before they're ill or after a crisis with the existing system, choose to go into alternative therapies, then I believe those alternative therapies should even do more for a patient than their standard physician would do. More openness, more quality time spent with a patient. I don't know how any doctor could ever work with a patient in under an hour. Because if you start getting them in and out in 20 minutes, you're not possibly going to get the kind of background, and you don't leave that to a nurse. The doctor is the one who has to make the decisions, and I believe that we need more quality time. Well, that more quality time means that you're going to see less patients. Less patients means you're not going to have the income. Without the income, you may not be able to maintain your standard of living. Not just office overhead, standard of living. Doctors have the right to earn whatever the market provides. I don't question that. But I also know that there will never be a shortage of people needing medical care. That's why it will always be a booming field. But I believe that we should bring humanistic and spiritual and compassionate values into holistic medicine where they're grossly lacking or completely lacking in many parts of the orthodox establishment. And yet every day I get complaints from people who went to see this holistic dentist, that holistic chiropractor, that holistic nurse, that holistic medical doctor, and they feel that they were not treated in a way that represented the higher ideals. That's unfortunate. So now, get all your homework up front. Know who you're seeing. Talk with their patients. See what they're going to charge. Is there going to be any testing? Why? Along the road, are they going to start having you come back month after month? I recently found out, just it was purely by accident. I was in a restaurant and someone came over to say hello to me. And unfortunately, this particular restaurant, I won't ever say anything that would be negative because maybe other people enjoy something. It's like a play. If I walk out of a play, which is most of the time, I would never say, oh, that was a bad play because everyone else is having a good time. Who am I to say that my taste and my observations are any less subjective or any more objective than anyone else who stayed for the whole play and thought it was wonderful? But I will share with you something I think is special, and then it's for you to decide after you've experienced, if you choose to, whether or not you agree or not. And if you start to see at some point there's kind of an alignment, you know, Gary has a pretty good pulse on, you know, what makes up a good meal, for example, or the kind of movie, then, you know, people could use that in some way as constructive. But in this particular case, it was a vegan restaurant, nice ambiance, but the food was just bland, tasteless, but it was expensive. Anyhow, but I went over to the owner later and I said, I've owned 4 restaurants, and what I've learned is you won't know immediately when something's wrong because a person doesn't feel comfortable saying anything. Most people just pay their bill and leave. But it's when they don't come back. And what if they came once every month or every 3 weeks? But you're not going to know it for a period of time. But what if enough people find this bad? So you should always be open to constructive input without being defensive. If you can do that, then if people find there's a way of making something better and you agree with them, then you're going to keep your place open and we all benefit from that. In any case, this guy comes over and he's talking about health, and he said that he was now in his second year of getting a particular therapy. And I said, why? Well, that's what the doctor said I needed. Do you have any blood tests to show the improvements? This person has spent tens of thousands of dollars. So that concerned me. I called that doctor the next day and I just asked him, why would you have a patient you would see for almost 2 years on a regular basis without determining, are you really helping that patient? The answer was non-instructive. Meaning, from my perspective, it was just about money. So do your homework. Don't go in blind. All right? Hope that helps you. Now we're going to take a break and come back with our phones open. You're welcome to call on our talkback at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment, and Lou Ann Panessi will be with us as well. Please stay with us. Have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. You can call in if you'd like at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. But we have Lou Ann on the line now, and let's go over and say hello to Lou Ann Panessi, a holistic nurse. Hi, Lou Ann.
Hello, Gary. Boy, in the beginning of the show, I remembered that when I was young, I was a young girl, and I first started getting my period. The doctor told my mother to replace my iron, that I should have liver every Friday. And I remember, I hated liver. And she used to make liver, but she used to make a little smiley face with onions and bacon, as if that made it a whole lot better. So, boy, I know a lot of people relate to that. And I believe that was part of a lot of the toxicity that I had in my liver.
And that's also, my mother would make liver on Friday. I don't know why Friday, but make liver on Friday. And she also would put onions on it. But liver always tasted like dry shoe leather. And so I would rather eat dry shoe. And when I told her I wasn't going to eat anymore, she understood. And she said, fine. I was considered the rabbit. Well, Gary Michael, you're going to have some rabbit food today? And then that rabbit food was iceberg lettuce. I'm lucky I lived to get out of New York where I could actually get some decent food. Now, you have some of the letters and emails of people in the audience. Why don't you share a few?
Sure. Here's one, Janice from Dallas. She is she's 60 years old, and she says, since I turned 60, I've become very depressed. And she says, all of my life, I've been a chronic caregiver. And she said, all I did was help people. And she says, while I was busy taking care of everyone, she was never really optimistic. She never really was real healthy. And now, since her kids are out and married, she realizes that she has to move back in with her son. And she feels that she's on the downside of her life. She was never a big activist. She said, I complained a lot. I understood what was right, but I never really stood up for it. People felt that I whined a lot if I complained about situations. Here's the kicker, Gary. She said she's been listening to you for 30 years, and she has all these books and DVDs, and she's a big supporter. And she's asking you, what can I do about this? And I'm going to tell you, Gary, this is not the only email. This is a lot of people that hit 60 years old. They feel like they look back on their life and they say, my God, what a waste. I've not accomplished anything in my life that I wanted to. I was so busy taking care of everybody else.
Okay,
are your thoughts?
Let's break this into pieces. I believe all of our problems have to be understood by deconstructing them and then seeing, once we look at each piece, how does this make sense? Where does this fit into the scheme of things? First, a lot of people make the mistake of mastering a career instead of mastering their life. And you always see the difference in someone who goes through life almost effortless. There's an ease, a smoothness by which they do things. There's a grace and joy in how they do them. There's a sense of appreciation in all things they have, if it's a friendship, or if it's being able to do something and give something. I remember on the block where I grew up, and we had, all of us boys slept in one bed. We had a 900 square foot house that I grew up in. That's small. And my neighbor had a beautiful garden, and she would come over and give us all kinds of stuff out of her garden all the time. Then they would give you fresh, but also they give you a lot of the preserved. And I had a chance to sit out in her garden a lot growing up because I was always curious about nature. And she said one of the joys of life is being able to grow things, knowing that everything that is grown will be given to someone. But everyone on that block, all coming from different backgrounds, they all engage in giving something to someone all the time. But they all did it effortlessly. I'll never forget the ease by which things were done. Today, we live a different existence. We just learned today that a lot of kids are getting better scores on their entrance exams by taking Adderall or one of the psychoactive pharmaceutical grade drugs, including Ritalin, and how many people are on them, and the numbers are in the millions. As if graduating from school and not having a really functioning intellect, because as I explained the other day, and I'm going to be doing more of that in a history of our educational system, Harvard, Yale, Stanford, these are actually anti-intellectual institutions. Hard to imagine because we consider the best and the brightest coming from the best universities. Well, but they're not. They're very good at producing people who continue the myth that the free market system we have, the neocolonial system we have, and the strict compliance to its principles be adhered to. You don't see outsiders ever getting positions of power in the United States. They're all accepted into that circle, the circle of known. And it's a relatively small circle, but it's an orthodoxy. And it's anti-intellectual, it's anti-spiritual, it's anti-moral, it's anti-ethical, it's anti-humanistic. In fact, once you develop in any of the attributes that show that you no longer are making your decisions in accordance with theirs, you're excluded. You're an extremist. You're a threat. You're a virus. And then the condescension, then the attack, the personal attack, to show that you do not deserve to be heard, to be seen, to be recognized. And all you've said is, well, I just did it differently. So then where do we go in a society that does not have room, does not make room for people who are truly original and have something that is of a spiritual nature to give? Up to this point, we haven't had any of those places. So it's been the remarkable nature of some who've managed to become known, but the vast, vast majority of people who have original ideas have not been. Instead, we're spoon-fed what it is that we're supposed to eat, drink, breathe, learn, where we're supposed to live. Our lives are supposed to be dictated by what we're told is the American dream. We have no choice in that. All we have is which one of the houses we will buy, in which neighborhood we will buy them, but not will we buy them. Which person will we marry, and how many children will we have, not whether we can stay healthy and happy as single. You can't do that. Why not? Well, normal people don't do that. Okay. And then you start looking at what we constitute as normal, and you start seeing a person has become a prisoner of their highly indoctrinated society. Then one day you wake up, as I recently did, doing this new film, which will be out in the fall, and I simply did the math. How many Americans are vegan? and the number is startling. What do you think the percentage of Americans today who are vegan are?
Oh, I don't know. I thought it was something like 10%.
2%. And only 1 of the 2% are even healthy vegans, which means that 98 to 99% of people are making unhealthy choices on a regular basis as far as the overall diet. Because a person said, well, I'm a vegetarian. Then you start looking at what they think constitutes a healthy diet, and they're sick as can be. And when I've said that only 5% of my audience self-actualizes at the higher level consistently with the discipline and mastery to first have a life to which they can commit themselves to issues and programs that are important to them, then you start realizing how few people actually have an authentic life, meaning their life. Take away all the input from all the other people who insisted that you would be a good person if you followed their advice, and you did, only to wake up one day and find out that you did it all right, and you even succeeded. That's how we got our promotions and our standard of living and our titles and our access to these unique enclaves. But then we're empty, and now we start hitting a date, 60, where we feel, now I see my mortality. Now I see that I have only so long to live, and I don't know when that will happen. And then suddenly, with that fear of our own mortality so dominant in this culture, we begin to realize, where do I go from here? Well, if you realize it's a great opportunity to transcend all your life, and since you don't have to be any place the rest of your life, why not then stop rushing to get there? Because Americans are all rushing to get to a place that none of them need to be. And then we're always taking someone else with us, the conditioned self. And then when we get in these arguments about should I do something, should I do something, should I binge drink, should I take the drugs, should I take the prescription, do I need this surgery, am I getting a second opinion, should I buy this house, should I buy gold, silver, should I invest in this corporation, should I not, should I take my money out of this bank, should I not, should I support the Occupy movement, who are they, I don't know, what have they done, no one knows, they've created 99% versus 1%, well how's that possible, isn't it true that the 99% became the 99% by giving their power to the 1%? Did someone walk in your house last night, put a gun to your head, say, you will come to Citibank tomorrow and you will take out a loan you don't have any way to back up. You will lie on your liar's loan, but I'll be the only one who is being accused of it. You will vote for these idiot, low-life, degenerate politicians, and you will not question their ethics, their morality, or anything they've actually done. You will watch television that is mindless, vulgar, violent, and you will accept that as joyfulness. You will eat yourself into oblivion. You will drink yourself into oblivion. Your kids will follow like you. You will whine and complain and make one of the most dysfunctional people in the history of the world, Oprah Winfrey, the queen of self. And none of that self is constructive. It's all marketing and manipulation and ego. But you will not question any of this. And then one day, it all falls apart. The bubbles collapse. They get sick. Everything tips. And suddenly they are victims of the 1%. Excuse me, while I still have a brain, stuff that 1%, 99% up your fetid anus. And why don't the Occupy movement do something like, how about inviting some adults into the room and to show you how we actually get some stuff done and have? Because if your Occupy movement was heading the heading the feminist movement, heading the civil rights movement, heading the anti-war movement, we would have never had any gains in those. Slogan is not the same as the constructive change. Now, well, all these students, sure, they're hip to it, aren't they? No, because 99.9% of all students in the United States refuse to go out there and get in the demonstration, refuse to become a constructive part of the change. Instead, they continue. Go into any university. I don't care what university. Ask them to open their wallet. Ask them to take out their credit cards. Ask them to show you the label on their clothes. What do you want to bet? That 99% of the 99% are supporting the 1%. Either we're a nation of nothing but badass hypocrites who refuse to be honest and don't want to go through the change because it might cause discomfort of our ideological base, or are completely ignorant of that, in which case, why are they in that college to begin with? They need some other learning. So that's what I would say to that person. Don't be angry at the fact that you wake up one day and realize you're empty, because you've been empty your whole life. It's just that you believed in what Homer, wrote in the Iliad, and Socrates took from Homer and Plato and all the others since then. They believed that our life was a void, and the quality of our life was determined by what we filled the void with. So become hardworking and stay on it, but never question what you're doing, and never question others for what they're doing. So one day you tap out, you're in your retirement. Did you ever have to question? Maybe you did things that were good, maybe not. Maybe you constructed things that were useful, maybe not. But never question that life is a void. Well, I say there is no void. If anything, our life is so stuffed, so crammed, that we can't get another thing into our life with a shoehorn, and we have to unclutter, declutter our lives so we can see that what they call the void, the great empty hole, is actually the spiritual consciousness of the individual. So when you can make your choices from mindfulness in the moment you're in, and you make them from being in that moment, you will almost always make the right choice. If given the choice of eating something as bad or good, you'll choose good. If saying something kind or unkind, you'll say something kind. If helping or not helping those need, you'll say, let's help those people, because the day may come when I need help, and I hope people that I help would help me, or with the same mindset. When it comes to polluting your environment wantonly and denying it and denying the significance, we're saying we're all part of this environment. But you can't do that with the current conditioned mind, because the current conditioned mind was smart enough in the conditioning process to always defer to authority figures in every choice you make in life. There's not a single choice you're going to make in life that an authority figure will not be there to tell you that's the right choice or that's the wrong choice. And so as a result, we can't even make right choices when we know them, if that right choice that we're making flies in the face of the enormous conditioned self that is going to smack it down. So it takes a great deal of focus and attention and compassion to stand up and realize that most of us in this world, and the vast majority of Americans, are living non-authentic lives, and we always have. It's not just this generation. And that we're never going to have anything resembling an authentic life, and hence an authentic country, if we don't wake up. And right now our rights are being taken away, and the interesting thing is they're taking away right in front of us. There's no secret in these laws. You can read the laws, read the executive signing statements. They're telling you, we're going to have you so over-monitored. We're going to have the security state look at everything, listen to everything, read everything that you do, that if we even anticipate that you may have a thought or a statement that you would share with others that could threaten our power, we will have the rights and will not hesitate to arrest you, torture you, kill you, whatever we want to do, and there's not a damn thing anyone will do about it because we control the mindset of the journalist. Do you think one of the journalists at the New York Times is any less conditioned than you? They are all conditioned. We're dealing as if the world today were the aftermath of the science fiction invasion of the body snatchers, where you go to bed one night, and the next day you wake up, you look the same, but you're not the same. Your spirit is gone. And we now don't have a spirit. If we did, we'd have a general strike and every college and school in the United States would be stopped. We would tear up the existing curriculums. We'd tear up the contracts with the private vendors. We would tear up every single one of these bills and compounding interest bills. We would tear up our credit cards. We would pull off the grids. We would throw all these bastards of the low-life degenerate human scum that I call politicians, all of them, every single one. We'd throw these bastards out and have zero money into election campaigns, and we would take back America. Do you see anybody doing that? A handful of people who are now in the progressive movement, the rest of them are waiting for their life to catch up to them. Thanks for your call, Luann. I'm Gary Nall, and I want to thank you for listening. Now let's go over and say hello to Mike Rupert, who's standing by with the Mike Rupert Show coming up next. Hi, Mike.
Gary, you have just been on fire lately. I love it.
Well, we're looking forward to listening to you tonight. What are you going to light us up with?
Well, you know, if you look around the world tonight, there's a million really good reasons to be depressed, to be discouraged. I mean, not the least of which is Ron Paul selling out through his son to Mitt Romney. But there's a lot of other very heavy stuff out there. We're up to almost one suicide a day in the U.S. military now. And there are very clear signs of that. And you know, I'm an elder. I have lived an authentic life. I can guarantee you that, Gary Null.
Good.
It's mine. It doesn't belong to anybody but me. But what I have to pass on tonight is maybe a little pep talk and a little encouragement, because there are times when stuff gets so depressing that you need someone to come in and give you a little attitude adjustment so that you can get your head screwed back on straight and find the juice to go on. And that's where we are tonight.
Great. We look forward to it. You know, I think if we took a two-month break and got rid of all the politicians, told them to take a hiatus someplace, and brought in the Hell's Angels, we would do better in Congress. I'd trust a biker over the President of the United States any day of the week.
Well, they do know how to get things done. They do know how to do it without a lot of red tape, yeah.
Yeah, let them take all the bureaucrats in Washington, the state, and the city with them. Thank you, Michael Rupert. Back in a moment with his show. Please stay with us.